be happy.
Hello, this is Gail Moskowitz, and thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, and today is Memorial Day. And I hope we will all take the time to reflect on the millions of men and women who have fought in our armed services. We keep all of those who have lost their lives while serving in our thoughts today. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and have practiced in Richmond for 31 years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. As you may know, each week on Mental Health Matters, I introduce and discuss a topic after which you, the audience, have an opportunity to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. If you'd like to reach us today, the number is 649-9737, 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Monday at 1 o'clock on WRIR. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. The show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of the past shows, by logging on to my website, Mental Health Matters, all one word, mentalhealthmatters.web.officelive.com. I'm happy to send you a link to my site if you email me at yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. That's the letters yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send me your comments, questions, or suggestions for a future show. Today, if you'd like to reach us, please feel free to call at 649-9737. My guest today is Alice Tuzignot. She is the executive director of the Virginia Supportive Housing Organization. I guess it's just called Virginia Supportive Housing. Virginia Supportive Housing has existed in Richmond for 20 years. Our subject today is why we must solve the housing problems of those with mental illness, addiction, and physical disability. This has been a chronic problem in our country for many generations. Why so many people who suffer from many mental illness are likely to become homeless. I'd like to welcome Ms. Tuzignot to the show today. Alice, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Gail.
And really, first question is, why are people with mental illness so much more likely to become homeless?
Well, people, especially with mental illness who are living on the edge economically, what ends up happening is a lot of times they'll lose their jobs, they'll burn their bridges with family and other support systems and have nowhere else to turn. It takes forever to apply for and get on disability. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why you find many people with serious mental illness who end up being homeless.
One of the issues that I reflect on is that people who are mentally ill, who are not in treatment, they don't have the skills to apply for disability, to do those things, follow through on those things. And I also think, and tell me if I'm wrong, that some people with mental illness actually prefer not to be plugged into the greater system because there's too much, they have to be beholden on some level to a bigger system that they have to plug into and don't want to. They want the freedom.
I think you're right. I think what ends up happening, especially when people do actually become homeless, is they really can't handle for example, the emergency shelter system or those systems that we have in place to catch people who are homeless so that we can help them. They want to be by themselves. They can't handle the rules and the regulations. So that is, you know, part of the problem.
What are the policies in this country that sort of have perpetuated this problem?
I think we want to put people in boxes and, you know, they have to, you know, follow the rules that we have made. And, you know, that's part of the problem. We have deinstitutionalized our system and said that, you know, people need to be out there in the community, and which is, you know, that's not a bad thing in and of itself, except we don't put the kinds of supports in place for people to be able to, you know, live successfully on their own.
Tell me what you mean by deinstitutionalized.
What I mean is that we want people to live in the community with less, less not being in an actual institution. And so many years ago, like 20 years ago, we decided we should open up the institutions and put people out in the community so that they could live better lives. And we just did not provide enough support for them.
So we opened up the institutions and put people in the community and then didn't provide the systems, the mental health clinics, the one-on-one support that people with mental illness would need to sustain themselves in the community. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So what are the statistics? How many homeless people are there in the greater Richmond area?
So Homeward, which is the regional coordinating and planning organization, it's a nonprofit organization, they do what they call a point-in-time count of homeless people. They actually do this twice a year. The last count they did was in January, this January.
2010.
And they found over a little over 1,000 people who were homeless. About 850 of them were actually in shelters and transitional housing kinds of programs. The rest of them, about 150 of them, were actually living on the streets and in camps and in cars and that sort of thing. About 30% of those folks that they counted reported that they had mental health problems. And another almost half of them had other kinds of addictions, substance abuse addictions.
I remember very clearly in 1979 when I graduated from graduate school, and I believe you graduated from graduate school that very year, since we were in the same graduate class, that my first job out of graduate school was in a hotel that housed deinstitutionalized women in the Washington, D.C. area. And this exact problem was still happening. And these women, it was supposed to be women's shelter, were made to leave the hotel every morning and told to go apply for services or look for a job. And it was just a horrible situation. So now, 1979, you said 20 years. I'm talking now 31 years ago.
Yeah, it's probably longer than that.
It's just been going on forever. So, okay. So how does this population of people, individuals with mental illness who are homeless, who go in and out of institutions, short stays in hospitals, does this population of people affect us who live in our nice houses, have lives that are not as disintegrated? How did they affect us?
Well, we pay for it one way or the other. I mean, that's really basically it. So whether a person is adequately housed and services are provided or they're living on the streets, we pay for it. But we actually pay far more as a community for someone who's living on the streets or in shelters. So we've done studies. Nationally, they've done studies that it costs between $40,000 and $50,000 a year per person to provide services to folks that are, you know, living on the streets. And we've done them in the greater Richmond area as well. And it's just a fact that if you're not stably housed, that it's just going to cost the system more. So people are going to be in inpatient treatment programs, in and out of those. We're going to pay for emergency room visits. We're going to pay for jails, prisons, all of those systems because, you know, people aren't adequately housed.
And why don't we know this? When I talk to other people, people who don't work in the mental health field, and I say to them that as a society, it is criminal that we do not have a set policy that meets the needs of our mentally ill, our elderly, and our children. And the response I get is that there's, you know, that we as a society are not financially tethered to those individuals, and that some people make it and some people don't. Why isn't that kind of information out there accurately and constantly so that people understand that we pay for it one way or the other?
Well, I actually think it is out there. I mean, I think the information is there. It's people, you know, we're in this, you know, reactive society rather than proactive, and we're not into prevention, and, you know, we're just into solving, putting a Band-Aid on the problem. So, you know, I've been doing this for, my career is 30 years or so. I've been doing this job for 13. But, you know, we started shelters, you know, 30 years ago, and we've been putting Band-Aids on these problems rather than fixing them permanently, which is really what Virginia Supportive Housing is trying to do, is, you know, permanently solving the problem.
Why do you think that the shelter system has failed?
Because it can't, it doesn't deal with people where they're at. We put all of these barriers in place so that someone with a serious mental illness or an addiction doesn't make it in those short-term systems and therefore can't get into, you know, permanent housing and stay there. You know, we say to a person, okay, you've got to be alcohol and drug free. You can't be exhibiting any kind of bizarre behavior. You can't be decompensating. You can't be doing all of these things in order to get into housing and into shelters, which is, you know, nuts. It's, you know, pretty crazy.
To say you have to make sure that you do not show any mental illness in order for us to treat you for the problem that has been created from your mental illness.
Exactly.
Okay. So the shelters don't hold on to these individuals long enough to sustain them and give them the kind of foundation they might need to move on, and they demand that these individuals act more healthy than they really are.
Right. Okay. Or, as we talked about before, people aren't really, who are seriously mentally ill, a lot of times aren't accessing the shelters because they can't deal with them. They can't handle them. So one way or the other, either the shelters aren't capable, they have barriers, or they're not capable of dealing with people with serious mental illness, or people aren't going to use them because of their mental illness.
So let me ask you this then. What do you guys do differently? Are you a shelter? What do you do at Virginia Supportive Housing that creates better systems for homeless people? And I know we're not just talking about mentally ill people, not just mentally ill people or homeless, but since this show is about mental illness, I wanted to highlight them. I think it's important also to say that people get down on their luck or lose their job or there's a death or an illness that creates turmoil in their life, and that, I mean, we could say that we're all just a step away from homelessness, although that might be an overstatement, but certainly not everyone who's homeless is either mentally ill or addicted or disabled. They just had a series of bad things happen. Given that, and I understand that. I know we're highlighting people with mental illness today. But do say, so what do you guys do differently? But first, let me just say one thing, which is if you have a question for Alice, please feel free to call 649-9737, 649-9737. We're talking to Alice Tuzignot today. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. She's the executive director of the Virginia Supportive Housing. Okay, so what are you guys doing at Virginia Supportive Housing to – what are you doing differently?
Well, we've been providing permanent housing with support services for people who are homeless and people with disabilities for 20 years. So we actually house people and provide support services. And we create our own housing, and it's subsidized. People pay 30% of their monthly income. Well, a few years ago, and we've been doing this, like I said, but a few years ago.
And what if they don't have any income?
It doesn't matter. Okay. We work with them where they're at to get on disability or to find a job. So that's basically it. But a few years ago, we realized that there was a segment of the homeless population that even we were not reaching. We were serving and housing people with mental illness, but there was a small segment, those are mostly the people who I was just telling you about who are unsheltered, that 150 who were unsheltered and had a extensive history of homelessness and a serious mental illness. So we started looking at programs around the United States that had, proven track records, best practice kind of programs, and found one that we thought might work here. And so we started the program 2.5 years ago, and I have to say it's really wildly successful. The program is called A Place to Start, and it is based on a program from that started in New York 10 years ago, Pathways to Housing. And it takes people with a serious mental illness who have an extensive history of homelessness off the streets and put them in housing. There's a PBS special that was done a few years ago that's linked to our website that I encourage everybody to look at because that will describe the program.
I will put your website on my website, and if you all would like to link onto that, please feel free to send me an email at yourmentalhealthmatters. Those are the letters, yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Or just get on to WRIR's website, which is www.wrir.org, and link onto my website, and all the information that from Alice's website will be there. It's a wonderful trail. It's a wonderful cyber trail. We'll figure it all out. Okay, go ahead.
At any rate, what this program does is that we approach people, we get referrals from hospitals and jails, and we just know who's living on the streets. And those that meet the criteria who have been living on the streets for a long time and have a serious mental illness, we have two requirements when we approach them to enroll in the program. One is that they we offer them housing. That's really what people want. We say, what is it that you want? And people will say, well, we want a place to live. And so we'll say, okay, well, we've got a program for you, but there are two things you have to agree to. You have to agree to, when we put you into permanent housing, to abide by your lease, pay 30% of your monthly income, and obey your lease. The second is that you have to agree to see a member of the services team at least once a week. Those are the only two things that you have to agree to. And so the first person we took in the program 2.5 years ago had been homeless for 21 years. It was a woman. She was living basically behind the Kroger in Carytown. I'm sure no one knew she was there, but you would see her around. And she
Where would she sleep?
She would literally sleep, you know, behind the Kroger in Carytown in a sleeping bag. And, I mean, just that's what she'd do. And she has been in permanent housing for 2.5 years. And, you know, she has a schizophrenia, very psychotic, but... And she wasn't successful immediately. I mean, we put her in housing and she had a psychotic break because she wasn't taking any medication. We don't force anyone to take medication, but she ended up being hospitalized. And then she started taking medication and we kept working with her and working with her. And she, because we have a nurse on the team, we have a psychiatrist on the team, a social worker, or a peer specialist, and we don't ever, ever give up on people. So that's the big difference of this program is the intensive services, and we also have housing component to it. So we have a housing specialist that's working with the team, getting someone into housing, and constantly working with the landlord. So if someone, you know, messes up and doesn't pay their rent or something like that, then we will work with the landlord and make it all you know, work for both the landlord and our client. So anyway, we have found that right now we only had one person out of, we have 49 people in the program, and we only had one person who ended up leaving, and we don't know where that person went. So right now we have a 98% success rate. But it's just, that's really what people need, though. They need to get into permanent housing with very little barriers that are put in their way, and then with intensive services wrapped around them, they will be successful.
Is she taking her medication now?
Yes, she is.
And is she functioning?
She's functioning, you know, very well.
And she's happy.
And she's doing just fine.
It's really, I mean, it is actually amazing. It's a great story. So you say something that is just so interesting to me, which is, and aside from the fact that you did put that preposition at the end of the sentence, but I'll accept that for now. You said something, which is you accept clients where they are at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, that's the first thing we learned in graduate school on the first day, is that it is really difficult to help a person to move emotionally, sociologically, in any way, if they feel like you are aggravated at their very being. If they feel like they're doing the wrong thing, they should be ashamed of themselves, or what they're doing isn't going to work, it's really difficult to join with them on any level, to make them feel safe with you on any level, so that they might then believe that you have something to offer them. And it is interesting to me. Okay, so you say that there's a program like this in New York, and now you have this tiny number of people on this program, you know, mm-hmm. that you all have here. Why is this such a difficult concept to sell all over, all the time?
Because
it's so expensive.
It is. I mean, it's more expensive than our regular programs. So, you know, normally it will cost half what it costs in this program to house someone. But for people who have these serious kinds of needs, it costs about $13,000 a year per person, which is actually still less expensive than it costs if they're out there, you know, just living on the streets, using jails and hospitals. It'll cost between $40,000 and $50,000. And we're actually doing a research project right now where we're getting information from the hospital systems and the prison system to find out what the costs were for the 49 people currently in the program for 3 years, and then taking the time since they've been in. And we don't have the full data yet, but we already know that it's dramatic. The number of times that they've been hospitalized has been dramatically reduced. The number of times they've been, you know, in jail or, you know, prison. So it really is making it, it's, this program works. It's just that, you know, we have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard finding the money to pay for a program like this because, again, it's about you have to be, you know, proactive. And so we can't actually increase the numbers too much more than what than 70. We can take about 20 more people in the program. But that's it, because then we have to start a new team, and that's expensive, and we can't find the money to do it.
So what other programs do you have going at Virginia Supportive Housing?
Well, we've got we're actually providing some prevention programs where we're helping to pay for people's rent to keep them in housing. We're helping folks with our financial foundations program, helping them improve their money management skills. And then, of course, we have lots of housing programs. So we are, you know, have our, the housing that we own and operate, and then we have housing that we're using in the community where we're paying rental assistance. But we have not enough to go around. We have waiting lists for all of our
programs.
You have
waiting lists.
Yes.
How are you funded?
We're funded. We have some fees, government money, but we also get money from individuals, congregations, foundations, and we're always needing support from the community.
How did they get in touch with you? Just give me your number real quick.
Okay. It's our main number is 788-6825. And,
and
of course, the website, too.
And I'll make sure that that's all available on my website. And probably the best way to get to my website is to go to www.wrir.org and access my website through clicking on my program. And it all works. It's just miraculous, if you ask me, how all that all works. Alice, you've been just wonderful to come today, and I know it's a holiday weekend, and your information is fabulous, and I am thankful that you all have listened today on Memorial Day. I hope you'll tune in next week when we talk about another shelter for people who are suffering, who are living in marriages where there is violence, and that'll be an interesting show. Alice, thank you for being here today.
Welcome. Thanks for having me, Gail.
I'm Gail Moskowitz, your host of Mental Health Matters, and I hope that you will tune in next Monday at 1 o'clock. And have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Be happy in every life. We have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy, don't worry, be happy now.